And Arlene to the SEC.
So that would be my sense of what the motion means. And if anyone really disagrees with me, say so, but that's what I thought it meant. So that's what I think we're putting forward as a finance committee. And I had Kim on the stack, followed by Arlene.
I personally would like to know what central services payments actually get made, because I'm not sure I'm getting that information, and I'd like to know if my station is not paying them. I don't know. That's what I'd like.
Okay. Arlene, you're next.
I support regular reports on what central services are owed and what has been paid, but I just don't think we need to, you know, be contacting the Net Finance Committee every time a payment is made, but rather that could be summarized on a monthly or a quarterly report. And the other thing is that I personally thought the intent was when transfers were made for other reasons, like in order for a station to make payroll or whatever. And in case you're not aware of it, Laverne has also, instituted, maybe it's been a longstanding policy, that when a station does need to borrow money from another station, she does also provide a small incentive payment for the station that gives them that, loans them that money. For lack of a better word, I'll say loans, even though it's all within the network, so it's not officially a loan, but in terms of our bookkeeping, it's a loan from one area to another. So stations do get a small incentive for helping another station out, and she does dog the payments to make sure they get repaid.
Yeah, that's important. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking in terms of, you know, how we do this, which is that we'll have interstation transfers as a regular agenda item on the NFC, and when we get to that agenda item, it will simply be a question of the CFO or the ED informing us of any pending or recently conducted activities. And since we meet every 2 weeks, that should be pretty timely. It's certainly up to the CFO and the ED if they want to notify us in real time in between meetings, but at a minimum at each and every finance committee meeting, and that will include, you know, tracking payback.
Can't hear you.
Stacy?
Couldn't hear you.
Okay, sorry. Okay, I'll try that again. So this is what I'm thinking of in terms of implementation. We'll have interstation transfers as a regular NFC agenda item. When we get to that agenda item, we will simply have the ED or the CFO report to us on any activity in the previous 2 weeks, because we meet pretty frequently, that consisted of interstation loans, if in fact there were any. If the ED and the CFO want to notify the Finance Committee in real time on the listserv between meetings, they can certainly do so. But since we meet so frequently, it'll be pretty timely. In addition, that agenda item will track schedule paybacks and make sure that that happened or didn't happen. So that's how I'm thinking that we'll do that. It'll just be a regular agenda item. And if nothing happened, it'll be a fast agenda item. It sounds like we're also asking for a central services summary periodically. I know that does come to the full board from time to time. Is it possible to get it at the end of each?
Lost you again.
Okay. Is it possible, Arlene and Laverne, to get that at the end of each month, or is that too heavy a paperwork burden? To the NFC, I'm saying.
I'm sure this is Laverne. We could do it quarterly. You know, that's a constant thing on our list of trying to get done each month. But on a quarterly basis, and again, since we still don't have our audit completed, it's like going in and trying to do a balance sheet and looking at the cash even at this point, since we don't have the balance sheet done for September the 30th because the audit hasn't been completed. It's, you know, you kind of, you go with what you know is in the bank, but it's not really the correct number. So it's just close, and you hate to put out close because it might not be correct.
Okay, but what we're talking about is central services transfers that have been made in a given period of time.
Yeah,
we're not talking about
cash. Because the cash is a buildup over time. So it's like you said, there's a complete report was done, but there's we can update it based on the best information we have. Well, the current numbers we can basically give you for going forward.
I think we can accept it. Yeah, we can accept it on the basis of the best numbers you have at the time.
Going forward from October, since we don't have the final number for September the 30th, we can do that.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, so is there any more on the stack? Does that work for people as an implementation process? And
Ken to the stack. Ken to the stack on that issue. Okay.
And if it does, then we will simply start with our first interstation transfer item as of right this second. But,
Ken,
go ahead.
Stack.
Yep. Go ahead, Ken.
I disagree with having it reported orally at finance committee meetings. It can be distributed electronically. Because otherwise, to be responsible, I've got to sit there, write it down. I don't see the point to oral delivery of information. It should be emailed out. These are the, whatever you want to call them, the interstate loans or interstation loans or interdepartment loans or transfers, just in a report and with the intent. Then you can accumulate and keep track of it. Otherwise, there's so many pieces of information floating around, you have to devise a system. This way you have an email, there it is. You got a record. You see what it was last month, this month, so on and so forth. It gets distributed to all the members of the committee, whether or not they happen to attend that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Point of information.
So it should be distributed as an email. This is in any information, but in particular this one about the interstation transfers.
Arlene to the stack too.
And that's it. That's my thing.
Okay. Well, let's go to LaVarne, followed by Arlene.
Just point of information, that in order to calculate that information, it has to be done, there has to be calculated. So absolutely, I don't think that's a question in terms of reporting it in a form, not just a report.
That said, I'm going to leave it on the agenda each time to ensure that we actually receive the information and that we don't drop the ball here. And so I think that's important because there's a lot of emails that go out, and I think it's important that we, stop and take a second and make sure that this process we said that we were going to implement actually, gets implemented. Okay, Arlene, you're next on the stack.
I agree with that. It should be in writing, and LaVarne took care of that. But the other point is I think maybe if we call this division loans or something, then that makes that separate from the regular payments that are part of daily business like central or monthly business like central services and payroll and so forth, where if we call it transfers, somebody could come back and say, oh, well, you were supposed to be telling us all this, and that makes the work load. It just adds a bushel basket over everybody's head so that we don't have for things we don't have staff to do.
Awesome. Okay, so the next National Finance Committee will have an agenda item called Interstation Loan Report, and it will mean the Interstation Loan Report, if there is one, has been sent, or if it has not been sent, we will talk about that, and that will be in a couple of weeks, so it should be sent.
Question?
Yeah, R. Paul.
Okay, so we see what we're going to do on a regular basis. The last meeting, we passed a motion asking for a record of all interstation transfers for FY12. So
yes, we did.
And I just wanted to bring that up so that everybody remembers we had that, and we're supposed to get that within 30 days, which would be early next month, I guess. So I just wanted to bring that up.
So, LaVarne, can the first report that we have, which would be due on June 5th, contain interstation loans as described by Arlene back from October 1, 2012?
Oh, sure.
I mean, from October 1, 2011.
Sure.
Okay.
We will gin it up.
Great. Okay. Awesome. That sounds good. So that brings us to the work of budgets. We don't have a number of the station treasurers here, so this will be fast. But for those who are, we can just do a kind of check-in on where we are on the schedule. for each station. I know WBAI has something to report. Kim is here. And I guess that's all we have for treasurers. If some of the non-treasurer members have reports from their station, they can certainly give them.
I can give you a brief one.
Yeah.
WBA.
But we'll start. Yeah, but we'll start with the first two treasurers that are here. Our Paul, do you want to go first?
Okay. We had a meeting on the 24th, last Thursday, and we got the draft budget from the general manager and business manager for that meeting. And we didn't actually go over it. We had other discussions, among them how to have meetings that are going to work, because I brought up that, you know, the new way we're doing it with the committee polling and voting on this stuff, essentially, is taking a long time, and we can hardly make one meeting per month happen, and we need more than that. So we're going to be polling the committee for June and July, and set up as many meetings as we can through June and July. And we had some other discussions about stuff during that meeting, and that's basically the deal for the budget right now, is we've got a draft. We're meeting on June 6th, and we should be talking about that budget draft proposal then, and after that, we should have other meetings to talk about it. So that's the report so far.
Okay. Alex, do you have anything to add?
No, I don't. Sorry.
Okay.
Arlene does.
Okay, Arlene.
Yeah, I'd just like to make the committee aware that I am in active conversations with all of the general managers about cuts, which are definitely going to affect next year's budgets, and specifically, I expect to have some beginning figures from BAI, PFW, and KPFK by this Thursday.
Okay. All right, so that will bring us to Kay and Kim.
I don't know what to say, because I'm kind of waiting to see about what Arlene is talking about, and
right.
That will, I think, indicate in what direction our budget is going to go.
I know. I was going to say something about that, and I understand that some things are in flux. I just thought it would be good to check in a bit about the process. Obviously, one thing impacts the other. But we're not at the point where budgets are fully heading to LSBs quite yet anyway, so.
Well, they should be heading to the MFC, and I have to the Finance Committee, and I have a Finance Committee next Monday.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what to say about that.
I know. Okay. Ken, do you have anything to add?
Sorry, I was on mute. No, I don't have anything to add. We're waiting for the budget. I do want to ask the ED one thing. We passed, I believe, a financial accountability, something called a FAP, financial accountability policy. And if we find a GM or business manager completely negligent or disrespectful of following a budget, I think we should implement that. I don't mean by that to add another task to Arlene or Lamarne, but the managed national can appoint somebody as a financial overseer and give him check-signing authority or something, because we just can't continue. I don't know. I can't say exactly what's happening at the other stations, but this epidemic or illness that's contagious of, we'll just finance that off budget, is a hallucination that's passing around like a rampant plague around the stations. So if it's necessary, I just would call on the national office to appoint overseers to manage finances in local stations. If you cannot get precise, disciplined control over the financing at the stations. And I include KPFK.
Okay. All right, I'm going to continue round the horn. I guess that brings us to WPFW. Campbell, you had something you wanted to say.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that we had struggled through our last drive. We were able to achieve $300,000. But our goal was 425, and we've had, let's say, less than the most enthusiastic engagement by some of our PA people who I don't think smell the coffee. Thank you.
Okay. Texas is missing in action, so there's nothing we can do there. I will report on behalf of KPFA that I have no cotton picking idea. And I guess at this point that maybe the most constructive thing that we could do is just get a brief report in on all the station fund drives and how they have gone, because obviously that's important and germane to the work that we do, to the upcoming budgets, to the cuts that are looking likely. And again, you know, it's information that any interested listeners should have in terms of, you know, how the station fund drives are meeting what we hoped and budgeted and projected for the second half of the year. So could those of you who are aware of the status of your station fund drives report in, and we'll do the same thing. We'll just go around the horn. Starting with New York.
Oh, okay. Here we are in New York.
Yeah.
Okay, let me... All right. Pardon me one second while I reach in here and make sure we have... Okay. Because I have to make the minutes while I type with one hand and talk with my mouth, which is not always easy to coordinate.
Awesome.
All right. BAI's FON, our on-air fundraiser, started May 1st. It goes to June 2nd. Through June 1st, which is through all of it. Or, okay. Anyway, the drive goal is $850,000. As of May 25th at 3 p.m., that's last Friday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we have $546,690. This is not on track to achieve the goal. I am hearing lots of producers going, oh my, we're not doing it. In fact, when I did my single pitching shift early in the month, from personal experience, it was the worst in quite a few years. So anyway, we are 62.5% there, but we are going to end it. In 4 days. We have 4 days from now. Well, say a week from the 25th. 1 week, mm-hmm. We're not going to raise on the order of $300,000. So
no.
We're going to miss. How far we're going to miss is hard to say, because sometimes when the thons go not that well, they pick up at the very end a bit because people say, oh, my, I better give something. But right now, mm-hmm. I think we can bank on not making the goal of $850,000.
Yeah, which is a high goal for a spring fund drive, but okay, I hear you. Alex, you have anything to add?
Just a general observation. At BAI, we had the February fund drive was successful. It came in close to about $1 million in pledges. However, in order to achieve that, it went to something like 31 days. And this is similarly going for 31 days. I think it's pretty clear that we're reaching some kind of a limit on the ability of this kind of fund drive we're reaching the limits of sustainability for this kind of a business model. And I think it's pretty clear that we're going to have to find some new methods for raising funds. We can't simply extend fund rights till they take up a third. They're taking up a third of our year now, at least at BAI, and it's not that much different at some of the other stations. So that's just a general observation.
Okay. All right, down the horn. So you kind of told us where things were at PFW on the fund drive, Campbell. Is there anything you want to add?
Yes, there is. It intrigues me that we have a NPR station here, WAMU, that is right next door to us on the dial, and in 1 week they raise $1 million. For us, 3 weeks, and we struggle to get to $300,000. I've noted a couple of things that they do that we may well consider, and that is that they exploit considerably the notion of car donations, of people making bequests and whatnot like that, plus which what they'll do is they will say, look, if you donate a week beforehand, they'll say, look, if you donate now before the drive and we are able to get $80,000, we'll take a day off of the drive. And oftentimes they're able to take a day off. That's one thing I think that we could add to our, you know, arsenal of ideas. Another thing is that what they've done just here recently is that they will indicate that they will have a drive just during their morning show, but they will reference it throughout the day so that people can call in. So their normal programming or the programming they love is not really disrupted because of pitching for the drive. And I was thinking that this is something else that we could probably pick up throughout our network, and it would be of some benefit to us. So those are just a couple of points. I imagine that there are other things that I would hope are, you know, being discussed with our partner stations around the network, and that, you know, we can use to, you know, evolve a system of best practices. Thank you.
Okay, I guess that will take us to L.A. Kim?
Okay, well, the total thus far, as of this morning, was $466,433. We're on day 14. My understanding is, once again, we're running, going to run this 25 days. So we're obviously going to be yet even further behind. I would say that the KPFK's general manager has stated publicly that he thinks this listener-funded model is broken, and it seems that he's trying to prove that. It's true. This has been yet another completely unimaginative and lackluster drive. There's no new ideas. I think some of Campbell's ideas are obvious, and nobody, I mean, it's like a determined effort to prove that it's broken and driving away listeners. So I don't think the model is broken. I think that we are paying too much staff who don't produce anything to the bottom line, and that's the model that needs to be looked at. For the kind of programming we do not have an NPR-type audience. Whether by design or default, that's what we have. And if that's the programming we're going to continue to program, then that's the kind of staff we need. We cannot have an NPR staff with a Pacifica audience. So, that's, you know, additionally, KPFK, I believe, is not broadcasting to the, well, a certain amount of our signal area because of our transmitter problems, and that's just another problem. So that's the big elephant in the room for KPFK. I believe that if we had a transmitter and we were broadcasting to our signal area, by default, we would be generating more income.
Ken to the stack.
Thanks,
go,
Ken.
Ken.
Yes, Ken. Ken's up next.
I don't know how we got into it, but if we're talking about funding for the station, the bylaws say that the station is to, as much as possible, will self-financing, which would be from listener-sponsored donations. And whereas we're very cautious about getting corporate funding or corporate grants or what people call corporate underwriting, we're all aware of that as a susceptibility to losing editorial control. I feel the same danger exists if we go for major funding, major donor funding.
Yeah.
It provides access to management and influence. And it's really not the Pacifica model. It's not a populist model. Again, it's appealing to the largesse, if I'm using the word correctly, of the rich and powerful, what's now been, critically called the 1%. So it's fine for people to make big donations, but I think going after them, we certainly can't rely on it. It's got its problems. And I don't think it's necessary. As Kim said, I think Kim just said something very, very astute. We can't run a Pacifica-based radio station with an NPR staff. Because in order to have an NPR staff of all those witty young urbanites, you're going to have to pay big salaries and have lots of production costs and so forth and so on. We can certainly have high quality and fantastic content that's not covered elsewhere, but we have to do it with interns and volunteers. We can't do it with a fully staffed programming department, news department, production department, and public affairs and public outreach committees and everything. We can't have all of those funded positions unless we go to a model of pandering to the broad public and covering foo-foo items and things of less import that they want, which we may have to do anyhow to get their attention. But we can't go on that. It's too close to being a commercial for us. So if we want to stay thin and lean and on point, we're going to have to operate in a very trimmed-down size. Can't do Pacifica Broadcasting with an NPR payroll. It's a very good point.
I want to say one more thing.
Okay.
That just to add on to what Ken said about pandering to these big donors, I have, since I got on the board, that is what I have heard from management. You know, oh, if only, you know, you can get big donors, you know, it'll all be good. And that is just a distraction from the fact that our listeners have decreased by, I don't know, 50%, 100%, however you figure that, half of what it was when I got there. Big donors is not going to help that. I'm sorry. And that's just... It's just a distraction, and it's avoiding the issue that of other problems that, you know, are too long to list here, but they need to be addressed.
Okay.
And all this outreach has done for us is lost us giant pools of money.
Alex on the stack again, if I can.
Yeah, I need to go around the horn to KPFA, but sure, go ahead, Alex, because I'll be brief.
Okay, just since we're getting into a more philosophical kind of discussion, I just want to say that there are many reasons why our listeners have been reduced over the last few years. Not some of them have to do with the quality of programming, undoubtedly, but a lot of it is not really under our control. It has to do with changing demographics, changing listener habits of younger people, and so on and so forth. So we're trying to extract an ever greater share of funds from a shrinking number of listeners. And as a result, we have more and more desperate-type premiums being pitched in our fund drives. The fund drives are the longer. It's driving people crazy, and it turns into a vicious circle, which in turn drives more listeners away. So this is what I mean when I'm saying that the model we're using, it may not be, maybe saying it's broken is overstating it, but it certainly needs some repair work. We need to change some direction somewhere. And I don't think the answer is that we can continue to pare our costs down in order to come into conformity with the shrinking number of listeners. I mean, at a certain point, you have to. How much more can you cut? I think we have to think more positively in terms of how we can increase our revenue, and maybe we have to, in addition to thinking about changing programming and taking advantage of new technologies and new media, we also have to think about alternatives to on-air fundraising that are now going on for like 100, over 100 days a year. I mean, this is insane.
Okay. So KPFA will be very fast. I don't really know. No one has told me anything. Last I heard, the fund drive was about 20% under the projected goal. I don't know what the projected goal was, but it seemed that it was not going terribly well. If the projected goal is the budgetary goal, that's unfortunate. If it was a higher goal, it may be slightly not as bad as it seems. I don't know the answer. We'll try to find out by the next Finance Committee meeting. There hasn't been a lot of public disclosure on how the fund drive was going, and I haven't been by the station because I was out of town for much of the month. Just in terms of some of the philosophical things that we're saying, I'm going to kind of embrace what Ken and Kim were saying as much as I understand Alex's point about positivity. And the reason is I think we have to look at the 60 years of Pacifica and realize that the kind of budget and size that we have been trying to maintain for the past decade has really been uncharacteristic of Pacifica's history, and I think there were reasons for that the previous 40 and 50 years in terms of a conception of what listener-sponsored radio was and wasn't, and of course NPR is largely not listener-sponsored radio. So the sort of the aping of the NPR model has very much put us into a financially challenging position. Not all of which manifested in the first part of this decade, but it all has hit extremely hard in the second part of this decade because our listeners are aging and the economy is collapsing. So to me, the issue of what we can and can't do with the funding model that I believe we should probably largely stick to, because I think Pacifica was founded to be listener-sponsored radio for a number of reasons, and that's important. And when you're listener-sponsored, then the question is, what will the listener sponsor? You know, what can they afford to pay for, and what are they willing to pay for? And if it's not as huge an organization as some of us would like it to be, well, to some degree, that's up to them. You know, it will be what they are willing to support. So my sense of it is that, of course, we should try to amplify our revenue as much as possible, but I think we should also pay attention to our founding charter and pay attention to our history and focusing on what we were really, you know, put on the planet here to do with these radio signals, which was not necessarily to try to be as big as humanly possible. It really wasn't. It was to be a conduit for alternative information that won't get on the airwaves anywhere else, and to, you know, to ask our listeners to support that because it's important to the extent that they can. And if we're asking them for more than they can do, then we may need to accept that limits what we can do. However, I don't think it means, and Ken said this, which I'm glad, that we cannot continue to put out some excellent content. It may mean that we have to change some of the ways that we do it. So there's my philosophical speech. Okay.
This LaVar is Kim. I'll let LaVar go, but I'd like to make one more little statement.
Okay, while we're philosophizing, let me go to Clavorn first because she hasn't contributed
to
this, and then I'll go to Kim.
Okay. Just kind of briefly, we're talking about models and NPR. And NPR stations, I don't think they produce the hundreds of programs that Pacifica attempts to do and now attempts to do these programs with paid staff. So if you look at an NPR station, I don't know, they might be producing three or four programs versus KPFA alone probably produces, I don't know, 40 programs. And also the Pacifica model has sort of talked about local control. And Pacifica is a national network. So where there's a program that's being produced at a station that has the reach to other stations, that's been done somewhat, like with letters on KNA. And if we understood that we needed to be able to programs that are being produced, being paid for with staff or even volunteer programs, we need to have those programs on the air, on the Pacifica air, which would be the other stations. And particularly the programs where we are actually perhaps paying for some programs, that if we produced a program that's produced, that it has the reach to go to other stations, like, for example, Richard Wolf, which is a volunteer program. And then, of course, Michio Kaku, which is being produced and shared and on the other stations. So I think that if we as a group, you know, let go of that ego thing and that desire to spend money at each station when there's a program produced at one of the stations of Pacifica, and put that program on the air. And there we could cut that. So therefore, we don't have to try to create 40 programs at each station versus NPR, like Kamala said, raising $1 million in 1 week. That's because they don't have to produce 40 programs. They're producing maybe two or three and purchasing programs from other NPR stations. So I think the model is that we are kind of like making our way somewhat to that model, but not really realizing that is, we have quality programs and we need to have those programs on the air. And to reproduce and to produce programs that perhaps are inferior to some of the programs that are being produced by Pacifica or that local station, you know, that's what we need to recognize and move on that. So, you know, we start talking about models. The real model is that we as a network need to behave as a network and use the funds that we have expended at one station and share that with other stations versus trying to recreate a program and say that it's local, so it has to be on our air, when Pacifica is the network. And recognizing that will allow us to take advantage of the quality programming and to have that so that the listeners around the country can not only hear this, must have a computer to hear it on the internet in archives, but can actually hear it on the air. So that's just my little summary.
Okay, so Kim, I think you're going to have the last word, and then we may try to wrap it up.
Could our poll have a philosophical thing at some point, too?
Oh, I suppose you can. Let's go to Kim first, and then I'll go back.
Well, Campbell would like to as well.
Okay, guys. Kim, you're up.
Does everybody know who John Sayles is? He's a filmmaker and a screenwriter.
Mm-hmm. A Lone Star, yeah.
Yes. Among others. He made, and this was, what I'm going to quote from him, was made early in his career where he was making low-budget movies. And somebody asked him about his budget and his business model, and he said, look, if I make a movie for $800,000, not everybody has to like it. So there we go. You know, if this is the programming we're going to put out, not everybody has to like it, but we need an $800,000 budget, not a $12 million Hollywood studio budget. So there you go. That's my point.
My next?
Our Paul is next, followed by Campbell.
All right. I'll make this sort of brief for me. Yeah, we have to, again, keep in mind that in terms of business stuff, these radio stations are radio stations, and they put out a single product, and that's their air. And keeping that in mind, I have quoted at various times an old slogan that's actually from the 19th century, early 20th century. Many years ago, you used to have the tent shows that would go around. Some of them were itinerant preachers who would set up a tent, and they'd call everybody in for the revival, et cetera, and they'd go from place to place. Others shows were Wild West shows and circuses and things like that. All of them that lasted for a little while at least knew the number one rule. And the number one rule to survival was, first, you got to get them into the tent. And we need to remember that. That's all I have to say.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Campbell, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't hear you. I think I agree it's important for us to get people into the tent. I think that, you know, in time, adapting to change is not a bad thing, and I, you know, fully subscribe to and think that we should continue to subscribe to Pacifica's mission and principles. And, you know, those are things that we can move forward with, and particularly in these times with the political environment changing as it is now and the challenges that are being faced, I think that we're finding that across the planet there are a lot of folk who would be willing to come into the tent. Some of them, unfortunately, don't know that the tent is there. And I think that it is incumbent upon us to see about spreading the word that indeed we have a tent and what we're looking to do inside that tent, and that we can spread the message outside the tent and get more folk involved, engaged, and to be part of the part of this mission and mission statement. I feel very much uplifted and inspired in talking with so many of our fellow board members, staff members, volunteers, on a continuing basis, and I think that I'm not the only one, because we oftentimes put ourselves and each other through a lot of stress that perhaps, you know, would be the energy might be better used in other ways. But I do think that, you know, we should try to take the best that we can learn from other folks and see about applying that, because doing the same things the same way and expecting different results is not such an effective way to go. Thank you so much, and back to you, Madam Chair.
Alex, can I speak?
Yes, is there anyone else who wants to be on the stack?
We'll be off about 3:15 in the morning.
Alex, if you don't piss anyone off, you might have the last word. We still see.
Okay. All right. I didn't mean to suggest that we shouldn't make cuts when we need to, and right now we do need to. But in terms of an overall projection of where we want to be, I don't think we want Pacifica to become simply an avenue for niche broadcasting to certain marginalized groups. That was not part of Lou Hill's vision. His vision was he wanted to reach the mainstream of America. He wanted to reach them with ideas they normally would not come into contact with in the mainstream media.
And I think we have to keep that, I think we should keep that vision in mind. So that's sort of where I'm coming from. If we're in the middle of, say, a potential market of 30 million listeners, we should be very loath to give that up because it may be expensive to maintain and so on. Of course, it's also a ridiculous waste if we're in such a market to be attracting, thousands of listeners that are not even 10,000. We have to do a lot of things in order to attract more listeners. And cuts, yes, are necessary, but simply projecting cuts into the indefinite future is not the way to go. We need a vision of growth, and we need a vision that will bring Pacifica as a real network into the lives of mainstream America. That's my feeling.
Kim to the stack.
Okay. Who is that, Kim?
Kim.
Go ahead.
Okay, Alex, but we need to stop the bleeding first.
Can barely hear you, Ken.
We need to stop the bleeding first.
Oh, Kim. Okay.
And then we can, you know, figure out where we're at. Right now, we need to stop the bleeding.
Okay, I agree with both of you. Are we good, everyone?
Good.
Okay, that sounds like we could entertain a motion to adjourn if someone would like to do that.
So moved.
What do you think we're going to be discussing next? Is anybody, I don't know, what's...
Next tonight? Next at the next meeting?
Yeah, should be next week. Let me, because we...
Conquer space and time.
Today's the 29th. No, it's the 12th.
Week.
It's the 12th. Because it's the second week. It's not every other week. It's the second week. Right?
It's the second week. I believe without looking at a calendar, it would be June 12th.
Yeah.
And then we would meet again on the 26th.
Right. Okay.
We can always jigger the schedule as necessary, but for now, that's where we're settled.
Well, I can't do it next week because I'm a poll worker, and next Tuesday is Election Day in California, so.
Okay. Well, then I will see you all on June 12th. Those of you that agreed to work on the transparency statement will see each other sooner. For the work groups on D.C. and L.A., we'll see if we can meet before June 12th. I think we're going to need a little bit of the stuff regarding the ongoing work on the cuts to play itself out a bit, but that should happen in the next few days, so we may be in a better position to meet at that point.
Madam Chair, is there no objection to adjourning?
No, except for the fact that some of us are continuing to talk. There's
yes,
no objection.
I just want to make sure that, you know, when we go that I can write down no objection so the minutes look okay. That's all.
Okay. Sounds good. Any last points? Okay, thanks everyone, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.